Welcome to Yara's Grow the Future podcast. Yara is the global leader in crop nutrition knowledge and a producer of quality fertilizer products. Grow the future with Yara.
Hello and welcome again from me, Ken Rundle. I'm with Philip Gosgrave, Yara's country grassland specialist. And as we advance into the new season, we're going to consider the general nutrient status of grazing paddocks. Because as everything warms up, including soils, there's a kickstart to growth, and that's not something farmers like to slow down. So I suppose, Philip, that means ensuring there's enough N, P and K in the soil.
Yes, that's as we approach April, it's important anyway to look at not just nitrogen, but the other major nutrients as well, the other primary nutrients as well. And I guess this is coming off a very wet spring and I suppose wet winter, where, you know, soil reserves of nitrogen are probably going to be more depleted than normal. And also, I suppose a lot of the soil conditions are going to be very conducive to the lower availability of phosphate. If we look at not so much temperatures at this time, but certainly wetter soils have less air in them, and that results in a reduced availability of phosphate. So certainly as we get into April, where there's an increasing demand for grass because cows' appetites are increasing, particularly spring calf dairy herds, but also on beef farm suckler cows as well, their diets are going to be, appetites are going to be increasing as we go into April. So certainly we need to look at not just nitrogen applications to boost grass growth at a time when I guess we're trying to close some ground off for first cut silage. So it really puts pressure on that grazing ground to grow enough grass. So certainly this is where we'd like to apply a good proportion of our P and K as well at this time of the year.
It puts some basic substance into the ground, and from there on in, you can push things further. But unless the basics are there, it's not going to work throughout the rest of the season.
And if we look at the grass growth curve, we see that it starts increasing in April and it kind of peaks in May. And that, because of, I suppose, and you're, that increase in grass growth puts a higher demand on nutrients in the soil, available nutrients in the soil. So if one of those nutrients, say if your phosphate or your potash is availability is low, that's going to then dampen the response to nitrogen, and you may not then see that full potential being met then in those, these peak grass growing months of the end of April into May and early June.
Obviously, by now, farmers should have tested their soils and know what they're dealing with, shouldn't they?
Yes, and this is why soil testing is so important, that you're not trying to come up with nutrient requirements for grazing with a blindfold on. By having that soil test there, you kind of know exactly then what the phosphate and potash requirements are. You can look at RB209 then, and then assess what the actual application rates should be with your soil analysis at hand. So certainly we would like to see, say, for typically on an optimum index of two for phosphate and two for potash, the requirement is 20 kgs of phosphate is the maintenance requirement. Now, for potash, there isn't an RB209. There isn't a maintenance requirement if your index is at index two. But certainly, we would encourage that farmers to apply some potash even at index two for grazing, because there is going to be offtakes, and we feel that if you leave it till your soil K index is at index one, you're going to be actually suffering an impact from low availability of potash at that stage. So it's important to apply some potash, and that's why we have these products. Say, for the example of grazing kind of grades, fertilizer grazing grades, like your 25-5-5s or your 27-5-5s, there was a reason why there was the same amount of phosphate as potash, because the work that was done many years ago showed that there was similar levels of offtakes for both those two nutrients. So that holds true even now, 30 or 40 years later.
I mean, all the livestock areas of the country, western side, have had this outstanding amount of water and rain. Do you think it's possible to actually underestimate just how much might have been lost from soils over the winter and spring period?
It's very difficult, Ken. We can only kind of make kind of educated guess in that with the amount of, I suppose, that overwinter rainfall and the correlation between that and the risk of leaching. So we would assume then that there is going to be lower levels of available N in the soil this spring. But that said, soils have been warmer this spring, so mineralization may have kicked off earlier, so that may counteract the loss of nutrients earlier on in the spring and late winter.
We can't ignore the importance of slurry at this stage, I suppose, and how it affects calculations.
Yes, Ken, and you know, I repeat this probably very often, but certainly with slurry for grazing, it wouldn't be the best match to use your slurry on grazing, because generally that slurry has come from, I suppose, silage. And so if you're going to recycle nutrients efficiently, well, then that slurry by right should be going back onto, you know, silage ground. But it can be used. I'm not saying that it can't be used, but it can be used, I suppose, targeted at paddocks that have maybe low P and K indices. So if you have grazing paddocks that are in at an index 0 or 1 for P or K, well then that is a good they're the paddocks or fields that you could target slurry with to help, I suppose, build soil fertility in those particular paddocks. But yes, slurry is an important resource, but we need to make sure we use it efficiently and recycle it efficiently.
So far, we've talked about the main nutrients, N, P, and K, but two we often then move on to are sulfur and selenium.
Yes, and I guess sulfur, if I talk about sulfur first, you know, we see a lot of work that has come out of whether it's Ireland or whether Northern Ireland or other places on the benefits of using sulfur on grassland and the yield benefits that it has. And we're seeing typically, you know, I suppose in many cases, we're seeing, you know, yield benefits of up to, you know, 20 and 30% from the addition of sulfur. Now, certainly the addition of sulfur, you know, if you're looking for a yield response of 30%, certainly on soils, freer, lighter soils that have lower levels of organic matter. But even on you know, medium soils or even on heavier soils, we are seeing a response to sulfur. And I guess if we look at our products, for example, Stock Booster S, you know, it has 5% sulfur in it. And I think at that level, you know, I suppose we've included it at that level because of the requirements for grazed grass. You know, some products, some compounds, you know, particularly blends would include sulfur at a higher level, but in our experience to date, you know, that level of sulfur is just about right to for grazed grass. And I suppose with selenium, certainly selenium is something that a lot of livestock farmers are including in supplements of some form or another. But we know that if we include selenium in our fertilizer, that selenium is very efficient from going from the fertilizer into the soil and then back into the plant. And it is basically effectively fortifying that grass with selenium. And that's, I suppose, if we look at the amount of selenium in grass that hasn't had a selenium fertilizer applied, it's generally very low. It's below 0.1 milligram per kg of dry matter, and it's more likely to be around about half that at 0.05 milligrams per kg. But when you think of it, the requirement for selenium, say for a dairy cow, is around about 0.2 to 0.3 milligrams per kg of dry matter. We can see that by using a selenium containing fertilizer, we can boost the selenium levels up to I suppose an area in the grass that will provide milking cows with a level of selenium that they need, a dietary requirement.
Selenium important for obviously all reproduction and things like udder tissue and mammary tissue, so mastitis, etc. It's an important issue. It can be provided in nutrients, but obviously at this time of year, what you're arguing is that it's best taken in grass.
Yes, and I suppose particularly, Ken, on farms, there will be cows going out to grass that will be still receiving supplementation, you know, whether it's in parlor supplementation or whether it's some sort of a TMR buffer feeding, and there will be selenium included in that. But, you know, you'd hope that come April time, you know, you want to try and include as much grass in the diet as possible, and feed as little concentrate or parlor cake as possible. So that sometimes leaves an issue with trying to get enough selenium into your cows. And by supplementing the grass, by fortifying the grass, you can make up that deficit very efficiently and very cost effectively by using a selenium containing fertilizer. And we know, I suppose, coming into the end of April into early May, you know, it's going to be the breeding season on not just on dairy farms, but also on suckler farms as well. And there can be an issue around about the selenium levels in diets at the time. So we would basically recommend that we start including selenium straight away in March. And for fertilizer applications in March and April, you know, you're building the level of selenium up in that grass, and you're building your cow's selenium intakes up, so that that's not going to be an issue come breeding time. And obviously the whole season long, it's important, because obviously, you know, mammary health is very important as well. And I suppose there's a clear correlation between selenium levels, low selenium levels, and a higher incidence of mastitis in dairy cows.
Do we need any reminders about products and application rates? You've covered it to a certain extent.
Well, I think for this, for, you know, what we've just been talking about, you know, NPK, sulfur and selenium, Yara have a product called Stock Booster S, Yara Mila Stock Booster S. And that basically is a fertilizer. It's a compound, a true uniform compound. There's nitrogen in it, there's phosphate, there's potash, sulfur and selenium at the levels that are required for grazing animals at, as we go into April and May, and even and into June as well. So that, and I suppose it's important that the selenium levels and the sulfur levels are at the requirement for grass and cows at this time of the year, but also the potash. It's a relatively, you know, farmers get very nervous about applying potash in spring, but applying potash in those products that contain 5% K2O is not going to be an issue, you know, with regards to grass staggers. And that would be the issue, that by putting on high levels of potash, that you'd increase the levels of potash in the grass, and that could cause grass staggers in both cows and in ewes. So there's not an issue at 5%. That's not going to happen. And I suppose you should only be applying it if your soil analysis is showing that you've got a requirement for potash as well. And certainly if you go into soil index 3 and above for potash, then there isn't a requirement for any added potash. But we think even at a soil index of 2 for potash, we should still be putting on some potash via whether it's fertilizer or in organic manures.
It's an annual reminder, this one, Philip, but nevertheless, the key messages are still important, aren't they?
Yes, and I suppose the key messages for me are, I suppose, looking at, number one, looking at, you know, soil analysis, and then assessing how much P and K you require. And we're not saying you apply all that P and K on in April and this in the next month or two, but certainly we should be trying to apply at least 50% of that P and K on in the next month or two, because that's when I suppose the highest demand and response from that P and K will be. And certainly look at selenium as well, Ken, and the benefits of fortifying grass with selenium, you know, for reproductive health as we approach, you know, the breeding season in May, but also for general livestock health as well.
Well, Philip, it's been a short podcast this time, but timely all the same. Thank you. Philip Cosgrave is Yara's Country Grassland Specialist. Well, spring may be on the way, but there are bound to be some surprises. Let's hope you, listener, are not the one facing them. I'm Ken Rundle, and I'm due back in a couple of weeks' time. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to Yara's Grow the Future podcast. For more information, visit yara.co.uk or yara.ie.